Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, protesters gathered across Egypt on the second anniversary of the revolution that ousted Hosni Mubarak from power. Opponents of current president Mohamed Morsi accused him of not doing enough and even betraying the revolution. On the anniversary of Egyptian revolution in Tahrir Square, the birthplace of the 2011 revolution, instead of being in a jubilant mood, the crowd was in an utterly different mood, which made them clash heavily with the police. Across Egypt, instead of peaceful celebrations, there were violent demonstrations. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now, to further explore the most recent developments in the most populous Arab country, Egypt, two top guests join us today. Now, in our London studio, I'm very pleased to be joined by top analyst and expert on Egyptian issues. Dr. Ali Kebani, it's a pleasure to have you on Central Stage.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you with us. Dr. Ali Kebani is an established political analyst and writer, well-versed in issues pertaining to Egypt. Now, over the phone from London, we have the pleasure of being joined by a top analyst. Dr. Adnan Al-Khalida, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you too. Now, Dr. Adnan Al-Khalida, as I said earlier, is a top analyst and, of course, a political commentator on the world of Islam, particularly countries being affected by the wave of Islamic awakening. Time to take a short break, but after the break, we'll be discussing Egypt and its latest developments. So please just stay with Central Stage.
Last Friday, the second anniversary of Egypt's revolution that swept Hosni Mubarak from power was anything but peaceful. Thousands of Egyptians staged demonstrations in Cairo, Alexandria, Suez, Port Said, and many other cities and towns to call on President Morsi, who took office in June 2012, to fulfill his election promises. This and subsequent demonstrations and protests resulted in tens of people being killed and hundreds more injured in the violent clashes with the police. The fear of the violence and deadly clashes getting out of control was so realistic that made the president on Sunday declare emergency measures that has taken effect for 30 days starting at midnight on Sunday. Morsi announced a state of emergency in the cities of Port Said, Suez, and Ismailia. He further said that curfews would be imposed on the three cities from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. A very important part of his speech was when he expressed his readiness to take even stronger measures in an effort to tackle threats to the country's security. He said, quote, "If I must, I will do much more for the sake of Egypt. This is my duty, and I will not hesitate." The remarks came after violence broke out in Port Said for the second consecutive day on Sunday in reaction to death sentences passed on 21 people by a court in connection with 2012 deadly football riots in the city, in which 74 people were killed and 1,000 others injured. The Sunday conflict, which left as many as 7 people dead and over 460 others injured, occurred during a mass funeral procession held for most of 37 people who were killed in clashes a day earlier, and when rioters exchanged gunfire with policemen at three police stations and outside Port Said's main prison. Following Morsi's declaration of state of emergency, a few hundred people took to the streets in Ismailia and clashed with the police. This comes as the president, in his address, invited the opposition and political leaders across the country for talks. All such sad developments are surprisingly happening on the second anniversary of Egyptian revolution. Instead of being in a jubilant mood, the crowds at Tahrir Square and elsewhere in Egypt were in an utterly angry mood. Rather than peaceful celebrations, there were violent demonstrations.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now Friday, last Friday was the day Egypt marked the second anniversary of the revolution that usurped Hosni Mubarak from power. So everybody was expecting scenes of peaceful jubilations rather than violent, bloody demonstrations. Dr. Kebani, did you expect that to really happen? Because I think it's really, on the second anniversary of revolution, it's not expected to see those scenes.
Most certainly no one wanted to see these scenes which we experienced lately, but actually I was not surprised, because since the revolution, the counter-revolution started to create a state of chaos in Egypt, and we can see now an organized process of sabotage to deny Egypt the political and economical stability which the country badly needs. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by the state of chaos? There should have been, after the revolution, a transitional or coalition government temporarily governing Egypt until a parliament is elected.
Right.
Then a constitution is approved, then a president is elected. Mm-hmm. But the situation we have now, we have an elected president without a parliament, which is the legislative branch of the establishment in a democracy, and without a constitution. And the president tried hardly to finish with the draft of the constitution. And as we saw, he put it into a referendum.
Right.
And we found that the opposition, who were not happy with their size, as shown in the last election of the parliament, realized that they will be out of power. And they hate the Islamic governments and the Islamic political parties.
Right.
So they are behaving in a primitive way, going, we can see political leaders going in the streets to protest like hooligans and supporting the gangs and the hooligans who are going, which is actually political naivety, because real politicians know that there is the democratic channel when they can put their challenges to the elected government and the elected president, and they can also, from now until April, work hard among the people of Egypt to get the support and to increase their popular size, so in the parliament they can change the constitution if they don't like it, they can even change the government by withdrawing confidence in it. So they can do a lot of things. But my feeling actually is that the Mossad is working in the political arena in Egypt, helped by the remnant of the old regime and the elements of the counter-revolution. And there are some political opponents and political opposition, but they are naive and they fall in the trap of the counter-revolution and the Israeli Mossad.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's go to another part of London, where we're joined by Dr. Adnan Al-Khalida. Now, Dr. Al-Khalida, a number of analysts are saying that the latest developments we're actually witnessing in Egypt mean that the Egyptian revolution's actually continuing.
Yes, I agree with Mr. Kebani just said. That actually the revolution in Egypt is still continuing.
Right.
And from day number one, when Morsi was elected, it was meant to have a weak Morsi in power.
Right.
So he can get the streets of Cairo and Egypt back to quietness, changing Hosni Mubarak by Morsi, but keeping the old system. The Israelis, Mossad, and the Americans wanted to keep the system of Hosni Mubarak, but by changing Hosni Mubarak, they want to hijack the revolution.
Mm.
So this hijack or counter-revolution, if Mursi stayed weak and didn't do any attempt to change the system of Hosni Mubarak, his opposition would be quieter and happier to get role in the government. But luckily, in Egypt, not like in other Arab countries, I find, although I have some remarks on the Islamic Brotherhood in Egypt, but this is the system. If the people of Egypt want Islamic government, if they want the Brotherhood to rule, the opposition should accept that because he came by election. And 7 months really or 1 year is not enough. And if people doesn't want him, they can wait for the next election and then the people will say their say. If it is democracy. This is a true democracy.
Okay, but Dr. Al-Khalida,
the majority of the Egyptian people want.
Right, the opposition are saying that they have their own demands. They're actually saying that probably they need the parliamentary elections to be postponed. They say that probably the constitution does not reflect the will of all the Egyptians. So they are also expressing their own demands.
Yes, this is a part of the counter-revolution, I think.
Mm.
And the violence in the street, it doesn't mean that the revolution is gone. It's just the opposite. It means the revolution is still there and still ready to put blood into their into their revolution to continue.
Right. Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about the casualties in Egypt over the last week, which, as far as I know, up to this moment is about 60 Egyptians unfortunately lost their lives and a large number of Egyptians injured. And we'll also be talking about the Port Said incident and whether the sentences were politically motivated, as the opponents state. So please do stay with Central Stage. Hello again, great to have you back with us. We're talking about Egypt, and of course you know that the last week has been a tumultuous week for Egypt, the most populous Arab country. Now many people unfortunately died and were injured in violence that erupted on Saturday and the following days in Port Said, northeast of Egypt's capital. Now the violence flared after a Cairo court sentenced to death 21 people accused of involvement in last year's Port Said stadium disaster, in which 74 people died. Protesters from Port Said were angry that people from their city were blamed for the football disaster. Dr. Kibani, we know that there have been lots of discussions about this, that the people of Port Said are saying that the sentences are politically motivated and they do not deserve that. There are a number of others actually to be blamed for that. So what do you think are really to blame for the incident?
What I said before is that the plan is to have a chaos and to have the sabotage of any process. Because we saw protests and demonstrations and riots because the victims of this football match in Port Said haven't been tried in court and haven't been sentenced. And when the sentences of those people came from the court, which I find very harsh, 21 people to be sentenced for capital punishment, I find it harsh. But there is a judicial process of first appeal, second appeal, and whatsoever. So the government here is innocent. The government has no role in this court ruling.
Right.
And I wonder where are these media who will always support the independence of the judiciary, the respecting the court ruling. So why they don't enlighten the people that the government, the president, and the whole civil servants establishment in Egypt has nothing to do with that. This is an independent court ruling against certain people. You might like it, you might not like it, but there is always a legal way to go and appeal against these decisions. They can have voluntarily lawyers to go and defend them and settle this issue. But it seems now, because the aim is not really the controlling, it's not this incident, what happened in Port Said, the aim is to find any opportunity to attack Dr. Morsi, the elected president, and call for his change. And right. I hear that in the demonstration, they are calling for the fall of the regime. When you have a dictator, you call for a fall of the regime. But when you have an elected president, you don't call for the fall of the regime. Mm. You can change him in the ballot box next election. So the media here have to enlighten the people, educate the people, and really we have to improve the democratic culture among people, because it seems for me that after 60 years where the Egyptian people were muted by dictatorship, now they are all talking and nobody is listening, creating this state of disability and lack of organization or lack of any sense, really.
Great.
How can people, after getting rid of a dictatorship and establishing a democratic regime, go and damage their infrastructure, attack the police, take one police officer hostage? So the state really has to act harshly against all those thugs. Also, Egypt never had those masked thugs which go among protesters and kill people. We have to uncover the faces of those people and to know who they are, who is behind them, and who has got the benefit of putting such thugs in the streets.
Okay.
The other thing we shouldn't forget, the petrodollars and the money coming from some Gulf countries like United Arab Emirates and so on to create this stability in Egypt, because they know if Egypt revolution succeeded and Egypt enjoyed a political stability, the example will, the wind will take the example to their countries and will take off all the dictatorship in this Mashyakhat al-Khalij or the Sheikhdom of the Gulf.
But, you know, Dr. Kabbani, very briefly, we know that the actually Al-Ahli fan celebrated the sentences. As I said, the sentences were quite harsh, 21 people actually being given capital punishment. You know, the Port Said residents are saying that the sentences were actually motivated because of the, you know, because of the a couple of years at Tahrir Square when we had the ultras who were supporting actually Al-Ahli, and then you know, they were probably pro-revolutionary, and those Port Said residents were not. So probably there are other you know, reasons behind the sentences, that Cairo is actually leveling this very harsh sentence against Port Said residents.
I agree with you and I agree with the people. It seems for me to be very harsh, because it is not a deliberate killing. It's a manslaughter during a riot, during a football match. So I don't have actually all the evidence which the judge listened to, and probably the photographs, the films, and what exactly happened.
Right.
So, but I believe in the independence of the judiciary system, and I believe that there is always legal channel to deal with this harsh decision. And after all, the president himself can reduce these sentences after, if he believes that it's harsh sentences, or if he believes that the public opinion does not approve of such ruling.
Excellent.
But it is early stage in the political, in the judicial process. So let us let the process take its role until we know the fact at the end. And also, I would put the evidence in the public television, so people to see if this is a deliberate killing. So those people are really criminals and they deserve capital punishment, or it is a manslaughter during a riot of a football match, like it happens anywhere in the world. So it is not a deliberate killing.
Okay.
But as I said, we have to see the exact evidence and we have to see the investigation of the police and the evidence in front of the court.
Right, thank you very much. Now, we know that Egypt's president has announced a one-month-long state of emergency in the cities of Port Said, Suez and Ismailia following deadly clashes in the country. And of course, today he said that basically the whether the curfews will be implemented or not is up to the governors. But anyway, in either case, Dr. Al-Khalida, that should mean that things were getting out of control and that security is still a big problem in Egypt.
Yes, what I can add to what my friend just said, that if you look at what's happening in Egypt, in Syria and in Iraq, similar scenes. And whatever the government do, mm-hmm. the people, the same people, like in Egypt, for example, I would think the same people were waiting. Mm-hmm. If the sentence wasn't that harsh, they would go out on the street and cause chaos. If the sentence was very harsh, well, the same people would go to the street and cause chaos. So the aim is the chaos in these three countries, which are the heart of the Arabic world. Mm-hmm. Egypt, Syria, and Iraq is the heart of the Arabic world. And the problems that we see, as my friend said, is the petrodollar playing a big role in it. And behind the scene is Israel and America, who want these countries to be in a chaos. The emergency state that Mr. Morsi announced
right.
is to keep law and order. Any government, any president, any ruler want to have law and order.
Mm.
They don't want people to go demonstrate. 100 or 1,000 or 2,000 people can cause killing and damage to property. And as I said, we can see that in Egypt, in Syria, and in Iraq. Those people mm. are not ready to negotiate.
Okay.
They're only ready to cause problems.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Al-Khalida, in his televised speech on Sunday evening, Morsi sounded very angry, didn't he? I mean, after he announced martial law, he said that there were lots of other things he could do for the sake of Egypt. What else can he do, do you think?
Well, this is the question which I don't think he can do much more.
Right.
But he's facing a big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest challenge in Egypt, if things not get better quickly, I think there is always risk of the army taking over
mm-hmm.
and making it, you see, all the Arab countries where mm-hmm. we saw the Arab Spring, the system starts from democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the real democracy is to do a referendum like Imam Khomeini done in Iran. First step, before we choose which system, we have to choose to see what the people want. If
right.
they want Islamic government, we should do as politicians, we should help them to have Islamic government. If they want liberal parliamentary government, then the politician has to do that. But to start from Western democracy in Arab Muslim countries, this is the indication that the whole thing is going on the wrong direction.
Right. You're right. But, you know, the thing is, Dr. Al-Khalida, that in Egypt, basically, people are, you know, highly divided. I mean, when it comes to the constitution, it's so that it actually, the constitution was passed with a very slim majority. So probably it's not something like Iran after revolution.
Yeah, but most of the Egyptian people are Muslim. In Iraq, if they do a referendum, I think most of the Iraqi people will choose Islamic government. In Syria, if they do a referendum now, if I was Bashar Assad, I will do a referendum to see if the people say we want Islamic government, I will help my people to get there.
Okay, great. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Al-Khalida, for that. Now, Morsi asked the opposition to sit and talk, and Al-Baradei said earlier today, of course, first they rejected, but earlier today he said that on his Twitter account that the opposition National Salvation Front wanted an immediate meeting with the country's president as well as defense and interior ministers in a bid to take urgent steps to halt the violence and to start serious dialogue. So that's actually the latest news we've got. But Dr. Kibani, is there really anything to talk about?
There is a lot to talk about in a national dialogue. But actually, I'm surprised of the so-called Jabhat al-Inqaz, دكتور برادعي صباحي الوفد
right.
سيد البدوي and عمرو موسى coming and putting precondition before the national dialogue. So if you put preconditions, you are controlling the outcome of this negotiation and talks before it started. And also, who are you to put conditions when you are invited for a national dialogue? And I'm not trying to put them down, but they have to show me their political size. They are well-known names, but they don't have any popular support. And that was very clear in the presidential election for someone like Amr Moussa, for example. Also, a lot of the Egyptian people consider him one of the remnants who shouldn't actually talk in the new era after the revolution, because he represents part of the regime of the ousted president Hosni Mubarak.
Right.
So what I'm saying is those people should sit with the president, put all their thinking, give ideas, but above all and before all, they should all say that they are against these violent protests, they are against the killing, they are against destroying the infrastructure. Because I agree with your honorable speaker when he said the counter-revolution and Israel and the West supporters, actually they destroyed Iraq, they are now in a process of destroying Syria, and they wish to destroy Egypt, because this is the most important Arab triangle.
Right.
If this triangle is strong, they can control and really create stability in the whole area. So the idea and the plan is to destroy Egypt from inside using some naivety and primitive political attitude from some political leaders or political opponents. You know, if you are a Democrat, you have to accept the outcome of the democratic process.
Right.
But they are doing actually like the Americans after Hamas won the election or the Islamists won in Algeria. So they were calling for democracy, but they didn't like the outcome and the result. The same thing of these Jabhat al-Inqaz. They thought that they are very popular and people will vote for them. And when they knew the real size, that it's less than 30%, and the political parties are more than 70%, they didn't like the outcome, and they are now protesting against anything the president, the elected legitimate president, will do or say.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's take a short break. After break, we'll be back with an assessment of President Mohamed Morsi's operations and performance over the last 7 months. So please just stay with Central Stage. Hello again, great to have you back with us. Now let's talk a little bit about the performance of Mohamed Morsi. We know that he's been in office actually since 7 months ago. Now, this is the question I'd like to put to both of our knowledgeable guests. First up, Dr. Al-Khalida, over 7 months in office, what's your assessment of the performance of Mohamed Morsi so far?
Well, I think so far he's doing very well. The violence, as my colleague said, that we don't hope to see violence, but I'm not surprised by seeing this. Actually, those who gone to the street instead of waiting and going to election again, they proving that if Morsi stay in power for 4 years and successfully with all the services, with all the change he's aiming for, they will have no chance to win the election in 4 years. So this is, they are witnessing, and they are actually saying that they are afraid that Morsi will be successful if he stay in power any longer. That's why they're going to the street and not to the election boxes.
But you know, the thing is that we know that the National Salvation Front actually is probably a very important opposition front, isn't it? And we have some top figures. Of course, Dr. Kabbani there was saying that probably they don't have enough support. So what's your take on the strengths of the opposition, particularly on the strengths of National Salvation Front? Right.
Supporters.
Right. I just wanted to know your assessment of the importance and the power that National Salvation Front, as the biggest probably opposition front, actually has.
If you look at them, it's a combination of Hosni Mubarak men, of those multi-billionaires who supported Hosni Mubarak.
Right.
And behind them, really, the Mossad and the Americans and some hooligans. This is how I see them.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's go to another part of London, in our London studio, where we're joined by Dr. Kabbani. Dr. Kabbani, I want to put that same question to you. We know that 7 months has gone very fast, and Mohamed Morsi has been in office for that time, and not a very peaceful period, I'm afraid to say. But what's your assessment of the performance of Egyptian president so far?
To be fair to the president, the problem of 30 years cannot be solved or start to be solved in 7 months or even 7 years. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, rather than letting the man work according to his plan and improve the situation after the complete destruction of the Egyptian economy, the political life in Egypt, the social life, so he would start really from scratch. But they kept him busy inside battles rather than uniting behind him to fight the main battle to improve the political arena in Egypt, the economic situation, and before all that, the morality and the principles and the social life of the Egyptian people, which have been corrupted by the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak during the last 30 years. So they didn't give the man a chance. They are fighting him by the remnants of the old regime. They are fighting him and dissolving the parliament in the constitutional court, the judges of which have been appointed by Mubarak, and their loyalty and support is for the old regime. The other thing, they created for him a political vacuum through dissolving the parliament and accused him of being a dictatorship, to have the legislative power in his hand to take it away from the military council. So when the military council had all this power and they declared all these constitutional declaration, no one of them, including this propaganda machine, which is called the national press, opened their mouth. But when the legitimate elected president put the military council aside, and he assumed the authority until a parliament is elected and the constitution is drafted, they accused him. So they created a lot of side battles to prevent the man from facing the main battle and working according to his plan.
Right.
And as I said before, this is to deny Egypt the political and economical stability which Egypt needs and deserves at the time being.
Right. Dr. Kabbani,
Until actually a parliament is elected and the establishment is completed, he would not be able to do much. And also, we shouldn't put much expectation on the shoulder of the government. The role of the government is to create stability, equal opportunity, apply social justice, and declare certain principles and regulations for the Egyptian people to build their economy and build their country.
Great. But, you know, the thing is that the protesters are saying that Muslim Brotherhood is actually behind Morsi. Morsi is acting on their behalf. And what Muslim Brotherhoods are trying to do is to dominate Egypt.
I don't know why the President Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood are shy from this fact. When any political party win an election, they don't shy from the fact that they should rule. And in my opinion, all the government should be from Al-Ikhwan, the majority party in the parliament, and because this is the choice of the Egyptian people. And then if they failed and the Egyptian people chose to change them, so they changed them in the next election. So actually, my criticism to the Muslim Brotherhood is, at the beginning they said we would not put a president and then put a presidential candidate. They said we will not fight all the seats of the parliament, we will not fight more than one third, and then they fought in all the seats. So they lost credibility, some credibility in the eyes of some Egyptian people. At the same time, I don't know why they shy from the fact that they are a political party, they fought an election, they won, they should rule.
Okay.
Like here, for example, in England or Great Britain, when the Conservative Party win the election, they rule according to the capitalist right-wing agenda. When the Labour Party come, they defend the labour rights and they act and work according to a socialist ideology and socialist agenda.
Excellent.
So the Muslim Brotherhood were chosen because of their Islamic program, so they should not shy from it.
Right.
And people in Egypt, in my opinion, support the Islamists at the time being because they, the liberals, the socialists, the capitalists, failed them during the last 100 years. So at the time of the royalties in Egypt, there was a liberal capitalist regime. Mm-hmm. It failed the ambitions of the Egyptian people.
Thank you very much.
A socialist regime under Nasser, it failed the ambitions of Egyptian people. So
Great.
They are trying now, the Islamists, to see if they succeed or they don't succeed.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Dr. Al-Qlida, a very straightforward question. Will Egypt be any different in 2013, do you think?
I think the struggle will continue. Mm. And as my colleague, Dr. Kabbani, said, what's wanted for the Arab countries is not real democracy. True and real democracy is what the majority of the people want.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, and you know, and everybody knows, and the Western politicians know that people in the Middle East, most of them, 80%, 85%, 90%, would choose the Islamic rule in their countries. This is why they don't want real democracy. They want some sort of democracy in a deformed way. The real democracy would not serve their purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So the only risk I see in Egypt, if the military take over, and that's the really big crisis. Otherwise, the struggle will continue,
mm-hmm.
and I can see Egypt progressing and the revolution continuing.
Right. Do you share the head of military's comment that probably if the same trend continues, it'll lead to the collapse of Egypt?
Yes. Yes, I think this is they are preparing for taking over and making the democracy the Western want in Egypt.
Right. So how optimistic are you that Egypt will actually will be led in the right direction?
I am always optimistic. I always believe that the right people and Islamic rule will sweep the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq, in Egypt, in Tunisia. What the West try to impose, this Western democracy, not a true one, is going to fail. And the corner of that fall will be Syria, I think.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now, we just have, unfortunately, no time left. Sorry to end it there. But as I said, we're out of time. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Dr. Adnan Al-Qlida, top political analyst, and Dr. Ali Kabbani, established political analyst and writer. Thanks very much indeed to both of you, gentlemen. Your insights are much appreciated. Thanks for coming on, for talking to us, and of course, for those insights. Now, until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team here at Center Stage, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Take care.